I'm Greg Johnson. Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. My guest today is Oscar Turner, who is a video maker whose work is available on YouTube at Omnify Media, and he also runs the Countercurrents TV channel and has done several videos for pieces I've recently written and recorded. So, Oscar, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
So, tell me a little bit about yourself, your age, your background, and then explain how you came into this movement.
Right. So I'm 17 years old. I'm a senior in high school. And this all kind of started when I was in the eighth grade, and our teacher gave us our English teacher gave us a assignment on the Holocaust, and I seemed to be the only student in the room who was curious, you know, to hear the other side of World War II, and you know why Hitler would possibly hate the Jews. A friend of mine, who's also a mentor to me, gave me some insights to a lot of these issues. He introduced me to the work of William Pierce and David Duke. So then I started, reading things like My Awakening and Jewish Supremacism, and I'd listened to the American Dissident Voices broadcasts by William Pierce. I mean, there's just, those were in the 90s, so, a lot of them are related to current events. So a lot of the content might seem a little bit dated, but, you know, often he'll, go on some kind of a historical tangent and give some of his knowledge, which those are the ones that I really enjoy. But so then, after I finished middle school, I went to this art school, and I began to note, and it kind of reinforced a lot of my beliefs with these issues, because, you know, around me I noticed that, not only would you go to this school for, to learn how to become a musician, an artist, theater, dancing, creative writing, but they were also pretty big on giving students ideological tools for, how to use their art as a means for, promoting LGBT and multiculturalism. And I mean, it was kind of surreal because, I'd be listening to a Pierce broadcast on, the bus or something. And then, within the hour, there would be something that would, prove him correct. I mean, it was just so surreal, because it would seem like Pierce or Duke or whoever would be saying these things like it was yesterday.
Yeah, I was really influenced by Pierce's broadcasts back in the, in 2000, 2001, into 2002. And yeah, they were sort of topical, but at the same time, he was constantly trying to illustrate larger principles about politics, and especially ethnic politics and the Jewish question and so forth. And so even if you go back to those things today, they still, I think they really drive home his larger points, and it's less important that they're, dealing with the news of the day, because it's still quite relevant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you read Pierce, you read Duke, you were listening to Pierce's podcasts. What other sources were you turning to at the time, and what other media were you turning to at the time? Was it primarily books or audio?
I would watch a lot of the Duke and Pierce videos. I think when it really started to kind of hit me and I started to get it was I saw like what really started World War II, edited by Norse Wolf, and that kind of really goes into the other side. It goes into how there was such a strong resentment towards Jews on the part of the Germans, because a lot of them had noticed, taken note of the fact that in Eastern Europe a lot of them were involved in the Soviet Union, a lot of the commissars and so forth. They were responsible for the Holodomor, the famine of millions of Ukrainian farmers. And so they didn't want it to spread west, and so they decided to unite under Adolf Hitler and National Socialism, and then the Germans enjoyed prosperity for a time. Whereas in the Weimar Republic, the Jews would, they had a very collectivist mentality. And, you know, they were very well off among their fellow bankers, whereas ethnic Germans would be in the streets starving. But yeah, so Pierce was, so that had a strong influence on me. I also was into the works of a James Mason and George Lincoln Rockwell. And I also read, March on the Titans. It's just kind of interesting. Like, it's interesting because in a way you kind of have to take a step back and then realize that so much of, you know, the history and philosophy and worldview that you're inculcated with from the time, you're a kindergartner, is the exact opposite of the truth and how the world really works. So you kind of have to keep an open mind when you're, red-pilled, and then essentially relearn everything.
Right. So how would you describe the ideology that you believe in now?
Around my sophomore year, I read Guillaume Fay's Archaeofuturism. I kind of like how, you know, it still greatly values, you know, white identity and the traditions of our European ancestors and our way of life, but within the framework of, you know, using hyper technologies to our advantage. So things like artificial intelligence, genetic engineering, and so forth, in order to, because within, you know, with two world wars, and all these, you know, heroic Europeans fighting and killing each other, we've certainly lost a lot of the best genes of our people. So it's going to require a great deal in order to get us on the right track that we once were on.
Yeah, I agree. War is a terribly dysgenic thing. And then, of course, all the other trends in our society are dysgenic as well. But it is fortunate there still are a lot of us on the planet. And in the next couple generations, if we can get a handle on, really, if we can get control over our destiny, political control over our destiny, one of the things that we're going to have to do, I think, is institute eugenics and try and salvage and promote the best white people that are still alive, that still exist. And I think that within a few generations, if we do that, we can turn this thing around dramatically. So it's not hopeless yet, but the downward trend has been really dominant for the whole 20th century, and it's continuing on into the 21st. So I kind of like the idea of just repealing the 20th century. You know, let's just repeal all the decline of the 20th century. And we can do that. That is still possible.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of eugenics, I mean, that's why I kind of think that it might be interesting to appeal to a lot of transhumanists, because in a way they are very eugenicist in their outlook. It's just that they're not really, they kind of skip over, you know, racial differences and biology and so forth. But they do kind of, you know, have this intention to, you know, for progress and to reach a higher humanity. So I think there's a lot of potential in that. And, you know, it's, I mean, like, geeky white people, I mean, what's to object to?
Well, it is mostly a geeky white people thing, or a geeky Asian and white people thing, primarily. And generally, when they envision the world that they want, everyone looks like a character out of anime, and not many of them look like they're black people. So there are a lot of different media out there. And when you decided that you weren't just going to be consuming material that other people have created, but actually creating new material and getting it out there, why did you choose video?
In a way, it was kind of a coincidence, because I was involved with a national transhumanist group, Aryan Legacy at the time. And for the most part, I would take quotes from the articles, and then I would make a soundtrack, and then mix that with music, and then throw a graphic on that, and then upload it to YouTube. But then, I made a music video, and a friend of mine, or a contact of mine, commissioned me to, he was really impressed, so he commissioned me to make a Cosmotheism trilogy by William Pierce, and so I went for it, and then that was made. But then a few months later, we kind of disbanded. So then I decided to take a lot of the material that I made and then transfer it over to Omnify.
So what are your favorite projects so far? And if somebody was going to look at three videos of yours as like a resume, what are the ones that you would put out there? What are the first three that people should look at?
I would say my favorite so far has been the Rockwell one. I mean, I remember just... I kind of just had this idea, like, you know, Rockwell's birthday is coming up, so it might be good to create something for it as a tribute to him. So then I went through some stuff and his speeches, and then I found Nazism versus Communism, and then there was this one bit that I found to be really inspirational, and so I took it and I edited it so that way it could just kind of be this one clean swoop of what National Socialism is in about the span of 10 minutes. So it took me about a week to, you know, gather pictures and footage to fit and everything, and then another week to compile it together. But yeah, it was really fun. I remember just coming home from school and then just really committing to it and just working on it until I'd go to sleep and not do anything else. That's how it is for a lot of projects. And then I really enjoyed working on a Hellstorm and the graphics for that. I mean, Hollywood will often, you know, push the narrative of, you know, how evil the Germans are and everything. And that was kind of the basis for, that's their basis really for pushing racial equality. I mean, they just bat the entire white world with that over the head in order to guilt us. So I think Hellstorm, I mean, in a way, it's kind of a documentary that I wish I was able to see while just kind of getting into this. It is very informational. It kind of goes a little bit into, you know, Jews like Ilya Ehrenberg and others who were very prominent in the Soviet Union and the atrocities that our gallant allies committed against the Germans. So that, I mean, that was great. That was an honor to work on in order to, you know, help spread the word. And then I would say the Voice of Europe video with a speech by Kai Mouros, I really liked. I mean, this particular speech I listened to when I was a freshman, and I think it was the first thing I come across that was his, and I just remember it being so revolutionary and hard-hitting. I mean, I bet if you told that kid that he'd end up making videos for the cause like this, he'd be shitting his pants, so.
Right, exactly. That's interesting. And what about the European Giant? That's the most recent one of yours that I saw. That's very impressive. I like the Rockwell video quite a lot. I thought that was a really well-chosen set of quotes and well-chosen set of images. It was coherent, and it really boiled down, you know, his case. And, you know, he was a remarkably intelligent guy. I think he sort of undermined his ability to be taken seriously in some ways because he did sort of like stunts and stuff like that. But I remember when I first read This Time the World, I was just thoroughly impressed with the intelligence of the guy. And he had a rationale for why he did the things that he did. And his speeches were well delivered and pretty well argued. I mean, they were tight and... I can't imagine that he was giving these speeches at various colleges around the country and not gaining some recruits, or at least slightly inflecting the direction that these people were, you know, being sent on by their educations. So I thought it was a really good compilation or really good distillation of Rockwell. But let's go to the European Giant. Did you create the text for that yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of looking for, you know, I'd read through, you know, the Dispossessed Majority, Kodrianu, you know, Pierce, whoever. And I was kind of looking for something that would be really inspiring. And, you know, they kind of talked about, you know, all our people's achievements to the world. And I wasn't really able to exactly find anything that I wanted. So I ended up just writing. I just ended up writing the script and it kind of came out, and then I put some graphics to it. But yeah, I mean, I kind of wish that I was able to get it out a little bit earlier, like around Black History Month, because I mean, that's kind of a time where, you know, they could just say, oh, look at us and, you know, how great we are, and whites have no culture. So I mean, I kind of just wanted to debunk that claim. I mean, that's kind of what a lot of my work is kind of debunking a lot of these claims that people are so saturated with. But yeah, just to show that, you know, whites do have culture. And I mean, a century ago, we ruled the planet. We contributed so much to science and literature and music. So yeah, that's where the inspiration came from for European Giant.
So typically, how many hours do you put in creating these sort of heavy graphics, heavy videos like the ones that we discussed, as opposed to, say, like a slideshow video that you've done for me of some of my talks?
I would say something a bit flashier is pretty much always in the range of about 2 weeks of free time, just because, I mean, it depends on, you know, what you're looking for. Sometimes you just want something that kind of conveys your point and it looks nice, and then you want to get it out there. And then sometimes you want to convey something, and when you add, you know, all these layers of detail and all these animations going, it can really accentuate certain things that you want to get across. And so, you know, I mean, I remember in a group that I did, that we did some activism for, like, you know, we were getting a lot of these very lib, I think like Salon linked to us or something. But, you know, in the comments, even people who weren't on our side were impressed by how well the edit was. So when something's very flashy and professional, it can have some nice psychological effects to it as well and impress people.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. One thing I've noticed is that a sense of pacing is really essential. Is there a formula that you use to determine how long an image should remain before you change it or before you alter it in some way, just so that you keep the attention of the viewer? Or is that something that you just do instinctively?
I think for the most part it's pretty instinctive, but usually I like to keep a shot at around 5 to 10 seconds, usually. You don't really want it to, especially with, you know, like vines and that type of thing. Like, media is just so fast-paced. You don't really want it to drag on too long. So around five, I like to keep a shot generally around 5 to 10 seconds. And, I mean, usually it's maybe like a sentence or two. Like, when I make my video, I'll just type out the script in a Google Docs, and then I'll kind of brainstorm how I want it to go, and then find images and videos, and then just kind of describe a scene that I want to create for each one. But yeah, it's usually like a sentence or two for each.
Right. So what sort of equipment do you use?
So for video editing and graphics, I mean, I primarily just use After Effects, just because, I mean, it's all my videos are pretty much just a long animation, and that's how I use it to, you know, transition between things and load all the effects. And then I'll use FL Studio and Cubase for making soundtracks, which I do for most of my videos.
So do you compose the music yourself too?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. I was not aware of that. That's excellent. That's a whole new level of talent here. So, were you self-taught, or did you take classes in your high school to learn some of these techniques?
I guess my background, I'm primarily more trained as a musician. But yeah, I mean, I pretty much just, I was requested to, start making videos for the works of Pierce. So then I just went on YouTube and started looking at After Effects tutorials. So yeah, I am self-taught.
Well, that's great. What instruments do you play?
Pretty much guitar. And then, but I also know how to read. So, I mean, that has an advantage. So I'll be able to just kind of go into my software and get a synth going. And then just click in all the notes and everything and get it to harmonize.
So you know Leo Yankevich. I think he was actually the first person who mentioned you to me. And I noticed that you did a video of a poetry reading of his. How did you get in touch with him, and how long have you known him?
I think he just sent me a message one day and was just like, hey, here's this poem I've got, and, would you be up for creating a video for it? So then, I thought that was, I thought it was a good poem. So then I just found the imagery and put together the music and everything, and that got it up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a good friend and a great poet. I'm really very proud to be publishing his work, and we're going to bring out a new collection of his poetry soon. So that's another project on the agenda at Countercurrents. You heard it here first, actually. So tell us about your favorite film directors, broadly speaking, people who direct feature films, things like that.
In terms of film, I'm really inspired by, the work of Goebbels and Leni Riefenstahl, Triumph of the Will and that type of thing. And I mean, when people actually, if you actually see Olympia or, Triumph of the Will, it is pretty impressive because, people have been conditioned to believe that, under the Third Reich, these people were just so oppressed and, Hitler was a tyrant and everything. But, then, you see the Triumph of the Will and, they all just have this sense of, solidarity and they're all smiling and everything. So that's particularly inspiring. And then I also like Stanley Kubrick. I think... 2000, I mean, I'm a sci-fi geek, so 2001 A Space Odyssey is one of my favorites. And then I guess some more modern stuff. I really like this channel on YouTube called OKM Net, which produces Kremlin propaganda. So I'm inspired by a lot of the animations on that channel.
So what are some of your favorite YouTube channels?
Lately I've really been liking Stefan Molyneux. Just some of the talking points that he uses, kind of sound a lot like ours in some ways. I kind of like how he very subtly will, get them in there and, talking about, the Jewish role in immigration and, the bell curve, migrant crisis, race and IQ and that type of thing. I like Paul Joseph Watson. He's very blunt and just kind of pissed off. So I enjoy that, sticking it to the, SJWs. I'm trying to think of another one. Black Pigeon Speaks. There we go. And I also like Black Pigeon Speaks. He talks about a lot of current issues and that type of thing, and I like how the graphics they use and it's a very good. He uses video in a very good format to talk about a lot of these things, feminism and transgenders and Black Lives Matter. It's not exactly like white nationalism or something. But I do think that, his channel does present, a view on a lot of these issues. I think his channel presents a view on a lot of these issues that, definitely does a good job countering the mainstream.
So do you have any particular video makers who do satire that appeal to you? People like Uncuck the Right or that Murdoch channel, for instance.
Yeah, I like, I've liked Ramsey Paul for a while. I think I've found some of his earlier stuff to be really funny. Like he had this video about, where he took it was something written by Tim Wise, and then he replaced, every time he mentions white people, he put it with Jew, and then he said that it was written by Joseph Goebbels. And it's kind of scary how similar they sound in a way, but, I thought that was really funny. Uncunk the Right is really good. I've kind of liked this parody, this trend lately where people will take, like Meraki, will take, you know, very pop culture, elements of the pop culture, and then, you know, change a few words around and then, be able to twist it, with a pro-white or alt-right view, on things. I've always kind of thought that it's very interesting to use the pop culture against itself, and, you know, using that is very powerful. You know, if you're at a party or something, you know, perhaps you could, you know, play some songs, that are parodies, and then people could, you know, they'll just, you know, kind of sing it and they won't even really know it. So it's kind of subliminal.
Yeah, I really enjoy the parody songs quite a lot. A friend of mine, this is really amusing. A friend of mine was telling me that his wife had only heard the parody of Under Pressure that Seventh Son had done on The Right Stuff, the Richard Spencer song. And she didn't actually know there was like a real song that was being parodied. And so she was in a restaurant and suddenly in the background she heard Under Pressure. And she thought they were actually playing a Richard Spencer song, and I thought that was really hilarious. But the Meraki's most recent one, where he does We Are the Champions, just had me in stitches. So I thought that was great. So all told, I mean, there's a convergence of a lot of different alternative forms of media putting forward an alternative right or a white nationalist message. What are your thoughts on the popularity of this, especially with millennials? I just think it's a tremendous opportunity to get the word out. Well, in a way, that's the wrong way to put it. It's as if I'm talking about getting the word out to them. They're getting the word out to us and to one another in a big way. I'm sort of following their lead at this point. I think it's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really encouraging to see but it doesn't surprise me that it's, you know, a lot of people in our generation are so fed up with the anti-white narrative and the brainwashing that they've been taught for all their lives because, you know, our parents, you know, in the 60s, the boomers, you know, were rioting and burning their draft cards and that type of thing and rejecting tradition, but it's in rioting for so-called civil rights, but it's not really, you know, the ramifications of that aren't really visible until now. I mean, you know, now we have the affirmative action, radical LGBT, and even you know, the social justice warrior insanity. I mean, I figured, you know, my freshman year when I came onto a lot of this, you know, I figured that race relations would be, you know, continue to be, they would just be awful because, you know, people feel more comfortable around their own and their own identities. And so there would just always be racial tension, and that, you know, LGBT would be more radical and the feminists and so forth. But I mean, I never foresaw that, like, you know, the cisgendered and all the, and Bruce Jenner, you know, all this, stuff would be such a craze. So a lot of people are just, you know, fed up. And, I mean, that's why we have the whole Trump phenomenon is because, I mean, he's a direct result of white anger and, you know, an implicit white identity.
I think Trump is a tremendous phenomenon because he really has changed the political debate parameters. He's pushed back against political correctness. He's talked about building a wall and getting a handle on immigration. And then beyond that, he's actually proposed something as wild as banning Muslims, which I never would have considered proposing, but it went over quite well. And, you know, he's also put economic nationalism back on the table. And, you know, I think that those kinds of topics were stage-managed out of polite discussion, basically, and kept out because the Republicans went along with this little deal not to talk about these things and not to oppose these things and just watch everything drift further to the left. And now that the genie's out, I think it's going to be very, very hard for the establishment to put it back in the bottle. So from where you're sitting, I mean, in terms of the people you're interacting with, especially people in your own age group, how is Trump going over? What do you think this phenomenon means?
Well, I mean, he's a civic nationalist, which is definitely a good step forward. I mean, that's definitely a lot better than, you know, just, you know, saying something as ridiculous as Hispanics have large families and, you know, are very and, you know, are perfect for conservative values, whatever that means. But, I mean, I think Trump's great because, you know, he's just kind of saying, you know, to hell with that and, you know, let's start putting America first. But there is kind of, there definitely is certainly a divide. You know, there's people my age who, you know, have, I mean, people in my school who have, I live in a pretty conservative community. So there's a good amount of people who are Republicans and they're rooting for Trump. And then there's kind of another section who lean left and they support Bernie. And I think they're, you know, and, you know, you'll often hear them say things like, oh, well, you know, a lot of his programs work in, you know, Denmark or Sweden. But, you know, they try to take all those, I think a lot of leftists have, you know, the right idea on some things. You know, it's good to, you know, be very anti-corporate, workers' rights and, you know, address ecology and, so forth. But I think we need to appeal to a lot of those things and realize that the only way that, their ideals can be maintained is in a European society that's homogeneous. It's not going to work in a society that's multicultural and panders to, you know, groups like Black Lives Matter and, you know, all these other groups. I mean, when they say they want equality, it really just means that they want money and political power.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. So what are your plans? Are you going to pursue video creation as maybe a career path? What are you going to do once you get out of high school? Are you going to go to college, pursue a trade? Are you going to stay involved in activism? Where do you think you're going to be in 5 years?
My plan's to go to community college and take some classes in video editing and computer science. My plan originally was to go to school for animation, but it's a very difficult route to pursue. So I think it would be, I mean, it's just kind of a safer bet to really, you know, go for something like computer science where I could, you know, get the 9-to-5 job to support myself. But I still want to, I still want to lean very heavily on video activism because there's a lot of important work to be done. And, you know, and I'm hoping in 5 or 10 years to, you know, perhaps expand Omnify, not just a YouTube channel, but as, you know, a company and a legitimate force that'll be a competitor, that'll be a rival to Hollywood and the narrative they push.
Well, that's a really great ambition. I hope you can succeed at that. I really do think that the new technologies that have been coming out in the past 15 years or so have leveled the playing field a lot in terms of what you can do with a relatively small capital investment. The kind of stuff that you're doing now simply would have been impossible in the 90s without hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment, and now you're doing it at home. So if we don't take advantage of that, you know, we're fools, and I'm really glad to see you taking advantage of it and this whole other cosmos of people out there on the right on YouTube who are doing it. It's just a whole world unto itself, and I've got very little knowledge of what's out there. You know, people have their favorite media. Some people are video people, others are pod people, podcast people, others are blog people, others are book people. I tend to be a book and blog person. I just don't have time to listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm too busy making content like that to actually listen to other people's work. And then the video stuff, well, that's just a whole new world because I've never even conceived of creating a video until we collaborated together a bit, and I would send you images and sort of come up with an idea of where they would fit. And you've done some really good videos for Countercurrents TV, so I appreciate that. Are you thinking of doing someday maybe full-length documentaries, feature-length documentaries, or hour-long documentaries?
Yeah, you know, I remember watching, you know, I've watched Cosmos, and I think there was a series that Brian Greene did based off his book, The Elegant Universe. I'm hoping someday to create a series that would kind of be based off, that would be based off of Who We Are by William Pierce. You know, and eventually I'd like to kind of have a company that would be, it'd be kind of a mix of like a Pro White History Channel and Nova. So it'd go into, you know, a lot of history things and science as well, because I mean, I remember having this curiosity as a kid, and a lot of us have. But something like Cosmos, they'll place a black man, astrophysics black guy, Neil deGrasse Tyson, with a teleprompter. And then, you know, the whole point is just saying, oh, well, you know, multiculturalism works because, you know, this black guy can understand science too. And so I think it would be good to have, a platform to kind of counter that a bit. And perhaps it could even be just a little bit subtle, but it would go into, you know, it'd be used to, you know, science and history would be used to promote nationalism instead.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I would love to see something like that. Science and history in short documentaries that sort of revisionist, or, well, let's just put it this way, real science and real history as opposed to the fake narratives that are constantly being foisted upon us. There are a couple of documentaries that I thought were really quite good as propaganda. They were self-conscious propaganda. One was the Kony 2012 video. Did you see that by any chance?
Yeah, I remember seeing that kind of when I was younger. I was, you know, just kind of starting to, you know, get into, you know, politics and social issues. And I actually... Yeah, I'm reading your book, Truth, Justice, and a Nice White Country, and I actually remember, yeah, there's an essay on that, and he actually says that, you know, I'd look at something like Kony 2012 and that we should instead, I mean, we should just kind of look at it as a propaganda tool and, you know, perhaps create something about the white genocide in South Africa.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's a really nicely made documentary, very, very effective. Did you see An Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore?
I haven't seen that one.
That's really worthwhile. In terms of creating a kind of documentary on white genocide or a documentary version of this white nationalist manifesto that I'm trying to create, I think that's an excellent model. Someday I want to do a documentary that would basically lay out the white genocide arguments and the necessity of a white ethnostate and deal with, you know, all the different alternatives, the false alternatives that are being put forward, why civic nationalism isn't good enough, why multiculturalism won't work, why going back to old-fashioned white supremacism is not going to happen, and so forth, and therefore why we need to aim for the ethnostate. And anyway, the two things that were most impressive to me and sort of stick in my mind as models for that are the Al Gore Inconvenient Truth documentary and also Kony 2012. I just thought they were very, very effective pieces of work. So, Oscar, I think this has been a really good conversation. I think we should start wrapping up. One thing I'd like to do, though, is make sure that if people want to see your work, they know where to find it. And also, if somebody wants to work with you on a project, give us contact information so they can get in touch with you. So where do we go to see your work?
So I'm pretty active on, I have some pages. I have pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr as well. And if you want to see my videos, just look up Omnify or on YouTube or the Rockwell video. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, maybe have some suggestions or something you'd like to see put together or a commission, you can reach me at omnifymedia@gmail.com.
Great, and I'll put that in the show notes too. So are there any final words you'd like to say?
I mean, I just want to say, things might look bleak at times and, it might feel kind of overwhelming to, know how the world really operates and everything. There's so much of us out there who, are opening up to the truth and the realities of race, the Jewish question, et cetera. So, I mean, there might be, but it never, in any given revolution, it doesn't take, just hordes and masses of people. It's always a very energetic and determined minority that bring about social change. At this point, I'd say there's enough of us out there. It's just, at this point, a matter of finding each other and coordinating our efforts.
I would agree with that. I think there are now too many of us for them to even think about suppressing us especially within the framework of their current government, the current system, which I think is a very hopeful thing. Maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part, but I do think that there are quite a lot of us. I'm just seeing so many new people coming into this when I look at the data from my website. What does the data look like from your YouTube channel? Has its viewership been growing appreciably over the last year?
I think a few months ago, like in December, I had around like 1,000 subscribers. And just within the past few months, that's tripled. So that's encouraging. I think there's definitely a lot more people who are red-pilled.
Yeah, most definitely. That's very, very encouraging. Tripling your numbers in basically 4 months. That's quite impressive. So it's great to know that you're out there. And there are a lot of other young people like yourself. Do you have peers that you can talk to about this kind of stuff? Or are you kind of on your own right now in your neighborhood or in your community? Do you have any people that you know in the real world, or is it primarily online? How do you keep your spirits up?
I mean, my approach at school is, I have some friends, I know who are, they understand where I'm coming from, with the way I view things. And then, on occasion, when somebody says, talks about white privilege or something like that, then, I'll try to kind of poke at it, in order to, counter anti-white rhetoric, just kind of subtle things. in terms of people in the real world, I mean, I'm excited because I'm going to get my license in July. So I intend to, you know, start really getting out there with activism and going to conferences and things. A few weeks ago, I actually met a comrade who I've known for a few years. He lives in Australia, but his girlfriend lives in my state. So we were able to, you know, just go out and have pizza and have a hike and talk about things. It was really cool to just kind of, you know, just talk to somebody who's like-minded about these things and not feel like you have to suppress yourself. I definitely encourage people, if you can, to, start meetups and that type of thing and really get out there. It is a really refreshing experience.
Yeah, I agree. It does really help, I think, to actually get a real-world group of people together. And there's more and more of that happening, and it's only going to get better. So I'm just glad you're on our side rather than on theirs. So Oscar, thank you very much. I hope this is just the first conversation of many, and I hope you'll be back at Countercurrents Radio.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me, Greg.